The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really Iron Man, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another assigned episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yeah!
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Welcome back, Tim.
Back after my one-week hiatus, back to talk about some comics. But I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And we also have at Roddy Cat on Twitter. There he is. Had to put the camera on you for a second there. Make sure you got your shout out. And hopefully joining us later tonight will be at PCN_dirt from popculturenetwork.com. And while you're going to websites, go to theclicknation.com where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews and news. And on the homepage, you'll see nice links to our social media accounts. We're on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google+. Subscribe to the podcast
Instagram.
Instagram's coming. Comic Book Chronicles. And what's the panels one?
CB Caps. Yeah.
And subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, YouTube, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. And especially on iTunes, make sure to give us 5-star reviews, leave us feedback. We appreciate it. Help us move up the podcast rankings. We are part of the Cult Slither Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us. Do it today.
Do it today.
And buy merchandise from the Comic Book Chronicles shop. Go to redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. Alrighty. So we're past New York Comic Con. All the nice comic book announcements have been made.
Most.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
There's been a bunch of movie news as far as trailers released this week, but we'll get to that after our comic book reviews.
So stay tuned.
So as we discussed pre-show, there were a couple of Marvel comics that reached their ends this week. The Astonishing Ant-Man, Mockingbird, and what was the third?
A-Force.
So we're going to start with those books this week. And first up is going to be The Astonishing Ant-Man number 13.
Yes.
All right.
Which I think Roddy Cat and Agent 70 both read.
Yippers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's pretty sad that this book is ending. Not that it's, you know, not that any of these endings are deserved, but obviously sales are just not supporting these books being, you know, to the continued publication of these books. It's a shame because Astonishing Ant-Man has been a consistently strong read for me for many, many months now. Mm-hmm. And this issue is the finale of a fairly end-to-end storyline that Nick Spencer has told in this book. It's about over the course of two volumes. It's about Scott Lang's relocation to Miami, and you know, kind of trying to create a new life for himself down there. And he's gotten into some hot water. We left in the middle of, spoiler alert, the criminal trial of Scott Lang, and without going into too much spoiler territory, because you really do need to read issue number 12 to understand what's going on in issue number 13. Scott Lang is on trial for breaking into Cross Technologies, and all sorts of mayhem ensues because it's classic superhero against supervillain in the midst of a courtroom battle going on. And there's some family drama that actually gets resolved in this issue too. In the Lang clan. There's a lot of resolution. There are many plot lines that get resolved in this issue. It was all in all, I think, a pretty, it's a pretty good step forward for the character, in my opinion, because there's a couple of dangling plot lines, that were resolved over the last few issues involving Scott, his cohorts, colleagues, and now his family. And it kind of doesn't wrap up in a nice bow, but it does, you know, leave itself in a place to be followed up.
Yeah.
Is he still in jail when the book ends?
Spoiler alert. No. Okay. What do you think of it, Roddy?
So, yeah, I thought it was a fairly neat wrap up to it. You know, you get the issue was mostly about the dynamic between Scott and Cassie, you know, which has been a long running thing between them two, you know, even with all of the bad stuff that has happened to both of them, you know, in history. I enjoyed that part a lot. I enjoyed the courtroom fight. The little bit of product placement that was there, like when Beetle and him and Janice was talking, like right before they went back into trial, before all of the shenanigans happened.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Of course, Darla's there, and during the fight, we get Thing Rings again, which I very much appreciate as being an old Thing cartoon.
I totally forgot about that, man. I was just like, what is that?
Yes. It was a beautiful thing. And she even said the phrase, too, and so it was all beautiful. But yeah, like I said, it does wrap up pretty neatly. I thought there was one part of it that I thought was kind of silly, but at the same time, par for the course for this book, because...
What part was that?
We find out the reason why Janice, a.k.a. the Beetle, was the one prosecuting Scott, because she was trying to get something from him.
Oh, yeah.
A.k.a. the Pym Particles that he has, because she didn't want to be the one insect themed...
That was pretty good. She didn't want to be the only insect-themed hero or villain that didn't actually change size. Exactly, so I thought that was pretty good.
Which, you know, Black Widow side. But anyway.
I'm surprised Spencer didn't put that in.
Well, I think you probably even said villain.
Okay, did say villain.
I can't remember. And I don't have it. I should
flip it.
But anyway. But yeah.
You got me curious enough now.
But I thought it was like, yeah, they were only having sex, so she because she thought that they would that she could get the pin particles transferred that way, and since that was a disappointment, she went to sue in his ass.
Oh no, she said it says, "Do you have any idea what it's like being one of the only insect named supers that can't shrink? It's humiliating. It's one of the only, so I guess it's not. She's not saying that she's the only.
Right. Okay. Well, still.
Yeah. Right. There's our no prize.
Yeah. But yeah, when things, you know, started jumping into the fight and it starts picking up, and I thought that the fight itself was interesting because of the fact that you know, there was some movie tie-in.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because of the suit Cross has on.
You know. Sure, I was waiting for the choo-choo train, the Thomas the Tank.
No, right? I did too. I was like, which is why I said my nose was like, well, you know, the movie didn't exactly go like that, but it is what it is. So, but all in all, I enjoyed enjoyed reading this. And like I said, it was kind of touching at the end because you get, you know, the thing between Peggy and Scott, you know, them getting to a different place and, you know, him saying that Cassie's his hero as opposed to the other way around, and even going, you know, throughout the book saying, hey, you know, she's way better than this. And I could see them kind of coming back with it, like an Ant-Man a single book, actually.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny that she'll be here, that she would be in that kind of book as opposed to maybe the Champions book. Maybe she's being in the Champions level because she's already been a Young Avenger.
Right. I mean, hell, you know, that could still be up in there. We don't know how far Champions is going. So
true.
Cool. Yeah, did they have a nice little thing, nice letter page from with the quote from the writer and whatnot saying, like, you know, keep your eyes peeled to see Ant-Man again soon.
You know, I don't remember, and I did.
I've got the physical copy in front of me, and there is no such page.
Hmm. Okay.
Interesting, right?
Yeah. To which, because we do see similar things in the other two books.
Right.
Yeah, I was gonna say I read some book that I felt like just ended. Oh, maybe I was reading the letter page to the last A-Force, I think.
Yeah.
Which I guess transition.
Yeah, we can get into that now.
Yes.
A-Force number 10.
A-Force number 10.
Sadly enough, did not make it to 11, 12, or 13.
No, not so much. But in this book, we have the wrap-up to the book and the arc. But apparently Ulysses' vision came true in a certain speaking, because what ends up happening, spoiler alert.
Hold on.
Is after everything that's happening and everybody in the town turning into bugs because of this one... girl slash bug creature that is the cause of all this, Nico ends up having to, after trying to think of other ways to fix the situation and all of our other teammates turning into said bugs, she actually had to go ahead and do what the vision said and kill the girl whose name was Alice. But it turns out good, because apparently the girl didn't die. She was actually some actual green bug monster to which we don't know from where or whence.
I love the description, because that's kind of what I thought too when I read it.
Yeah. So and there looks to be some kind of I don't know what the word I'm looking for. The team kind of came back together to the, because the whole thing started from the vision. Mm-hmm. And the rift between Nico and Captain Marvel because of the vision, which started that whole chain of reaction going off in the first place. And then they got to a place, and at the end of the book, they went to see Jennifer, who was still at the time laid up in the hospital, still green. And thus ended the book. And it did have a letters page of saying, hey, you know, enjoyed writing the book, and hope, and pretty much saying that, hey, if you want to see more of this, you know, write Marvel, maybe trigger some more type of situation. But yeah, like I said, it wrapped up about as good as it was probably going to with all of that, you know.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, just to add on to that, I thought that, you know, I had stopped reading A-Force for a while, and you know, it just wasn't compelling. Although I love the character interaction, and that was the selling point.
Yeah,
you know, it was a huge selling point for this book. The characters and how they interacted was a real draw for me, at least through the first maybe 6 or 7 issues. Or maybe four, you know, 5 or 6 issues. I think I dropped it right around the midway point of the series. And it looks like I haven't really missed anything, but it still felt like it was worth reading just to see and observe the interactions between these characters, who obviously were brought together in a very contrived way through Secret Wars. But at the same time, it was a very cool, you know, they still interacted sort of how you would expect them to, even if you had never read an issue of Secret Wars, the A-Force limited series from Secret Wars. So it all felt very much in character, as opposed to how a lot of this stuff in Civil War 2 is not in character for so many of these characters. So, right. You know, it was very, like I said, it's very, you know, it was a very nice send-off. Well, actually, I don't know if I said this yet, but it's a very nice send-off for these characters as a group. And hopefully we see them again soon.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, then now that I'm thinking about it, you spoke of the character interactions. It does kind of remind me, because that's kind of been the theme throughout the whole book, depending on who's been writing it. Uh-huh. And another thing, at the end of it kind of reminded me of the X-Men book with the female-led Storm, mm-hmm. Storm one, which...
Yeah, I was just thinking about that book.
Yeah.
Ryan Wood wrote it, right?
G. Willow Wilson. There was a couple of people who wrote that book, because I think it changed hands. But
yeah, G. Willow, I think, did an arc on it.
Yeah, I think she might have did the middle arc on that, because it changed hands a couple of times, or at least once or twice. And I can't remember if Brian Wood was on the book in the beginning or not. But regardless, it kind of had that kind of dynamic to it, and that's why I appreciated it for that. And they were even poised to add another teammate to the book, you know, if it probably would have lasted, or assuming they were going to add the person to the, you know, to the list. So. But yeah, it was a good send-off. Hopefully, maybe we'll see some more of them in the future.
And the last book to end this week for Marvel was Mockingbird number 8.
Very sad to see this go.
Yes.
This book has also been one that's been really great. What's that?
I thought it was a limited series when it began, so it actually lasted longer than I thought.
Yeah, see, that's the key. It lasted longer than any of us thought.
Because I remember when we first talked about it, I could have sworn they said it was, I probably should look back and check.
Like a 4 or 5 issue limited series.
I thought
series.
It said 6.
I thought it was so, 5, to be honest, but...
Nah, well, like I said, when I remember us talking about it, I thought they said 6. I could be wrong. I don't know. But then we saw it, you know, go past that. And I guess, because we got kind of worried it was actually an ongoing or some kind of word that it was. Nevertheless, mm-hmm. It's ending now and kind of sudden. Because they even mentioned in an article that would come up later about they didn't even wait to see the trade go on sale to see how that goes, which is not terribly normal.
Mm.
But I guess, you know, it is what it is. So getting to the plot. Bobby's still on the cruise ship with Hunter, and come to find out that the person that has been responsible for her being there is one Lincoln Slade, the Phantom Rider, you know, which harkens back to a bad part of Wacko's history.
Really? Well, the Phantom Rider.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when she got kidnapped and...
Yes, okay, and went back in time. Oh, yeah.
And essentially caused her and Clint to get divorced, except for the fact that in this book, which is part I'm not crazy about, they revised some of that shit because, there's two things. One, in the course of the book, Bobby, at the end of the book, when all is said and done, Bobby says that Clint did not divorce her because of that, and that he pretty much made up the drug part because he was trying to deal with the fact that she was cheating on him, which I'm saying, like, no, she wasn't. That's dumb. She was kidnapped and, you know, and drugged and made to love the dude. So that, and the fact that in the beginning of the book, there was something about excessive wooing as opposed to her being, you know, raped, which was the original thing. So they revised a couple of things on that, and that part was kind of, both of those parts were really weird. Okay. Outside of that, the stuff leading up to this to that was actually pretty good, because you see the fight between the people, her, Bobby, the people on Bobby Hunter, the people on the cruise ship fighting Phantom Rider, which, you know, is a ship full of nerds, so it goes off kind of spectacularly.
Photon blast!
Magic missile! Magic missle!
I'm just flipping through this. It looks like so much fun.
It is, and it, like, up until the point that to where the revision comes in, it was like, I'm like, okay, this is funny, Cindy, because there is so much silliness that comes up. Like, you got were corgis. Excuse me. You have that whole thing with the, you know.
I saw a flowchart in here. The Ghost Cowboy, yeah, exactly. Stalker X Plan Flowchart 3B.
Progressive feminist ghost pirates. A dog named Sensei Ping. You know, so it's just, a lot of real fun stuff that happened to it, but.
That is funny. This looks good. I'm looking forward to reading this.
Yeah. If you have a chance to read it, please do.
Definitely. I got my physical copy right here. Make sure to flip through it.
And as with the A-Force, there was a slight impassion. Well, the article says it, because Chelsea Kane, the writer of the book, was on Twitter saying, hey, you know, go, if you want to see more of this, you know, holler at Marvel, basically. And there is a similar sentiment in the letter page of this book, you know. At the same time, and I would really hope that Bobby gets another book, and hopefully she's writing it again. But they shouldn't have killed this one. But you know, I don't.
Well, I think, you know, whatchamacallit, Chelsea Kane mentions that Katie Kubert used to be on the editorial staff, I guess, at Marvel. I think she moved over to DC, right?
No, but she still was.
No, the cover artist signed with DC, Joel Jones.
Yeah, because Kate Cooper still is listed as editor of this book, if I'm not mistaken.
And well, the letter...
Joelle Jones.
I was going to say, the letter from Chelsea Kane says that she's no longer at Marvel. That's why.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just looking at that on the last page, so...
Maybe.
But you know, in any event, you know, it's a shame that Mockingbird has come to an end. And, you know, I'm looking forward to actually rereading this, 1-8, and see how it reads again. All right. So... Well, I didn't read very many books this week. It looks like Tim read the exact same number I did. We've already covered two of mine. How about we cover, see if there's anything else we have in common. Nope, looks like Tim hasn't read anything else I've read.
And just a note, it looks like she is at Marvel, but she was formerly a DC editor.
Okay.
Are you talking about Katie Kubert?
Yeah.
Well, this is she used to be editor in the Batman office, I think.
Correct, yeah.
Right. So we don't wonder what Chelsea Kane meant by that, then.
I don't know. We're just going back and just, this is news? Who knows?
Strange.
Let me pull that up so I can read what y'all are reading. But let's see. Looking for something to jump to next?
Yeah.
Okay. I actually didn't finish Trinity. I got to like halfway point of it. It looks great. Art's nice. I like the... It looks like some kind of weird time travel-ish stories taking place where the Trinity sent back to the past of Clark Kent.
Except for, it looks like at the end of it, spoiler alert, some other shenanigans. Not to spoil it for you, but there's some other shenanigans afoot in the present that is causing that. In fact, it's a slightly familiar... if you think about a certain a popular Superman issue, it looks like it could have ties to that. And also a Batman villain could be involved, or is involved.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. So, but yeah, I enjoyed this also. The whole past stuff and seeing things from Superman's point of view was kind of interesting. The only thing I will say is I don't know how far you got. Like, you know, Bruce could have warned Clark about the doggone water. And that's all I'm going to say. instead of being Batman at that point, because I was like, okay, that whole scene was unnecessary. But he had to be Batman. So, but as I said, I enjoyed this book, and I didn't. Well, when I read that last issue, I didn't think I would, but apparently it's
growing on you.
It was good the first issue. Right. But I'm just saying, you know, me not reading so much the DC books, especially the big three folks, which I guess I'm doing more of now, or at least with this book and a couple others. But I'm not reading most of the separate stuff.
Right.
But I'm enjoying this.
They got good stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about Black Panther number 7. It's another book I read. Did you read that too, Tim?
No. All right. I need to read 7.
Okay. Take it away from me. Roddy, you want to take us through this? Because I kind of had an uneven experience reading this one.
Okay.
Was this the return of Still Freeze?
No.
Okay.
I forgot who was on the book. It wasn't Still Freeze.
I'll tell you in a second.
Yeah, somebody can look that up. But, so, at the end of last issue...
It's still Sprouse.
Thank you, yeah. Yes. Okay. One, I'm excited about this because it was a new, brand new crew. And at the beginning of this book, we see them come in because, you know, T'Challa was still bound and, you know, getting Stain to talk. And they get to a point to where Stain's like, I should be king and this and that and the other. And, you know, as villains do, go through their wah-ha-ha phase. And then he looks at T'Challa and is like, wait a minute, this is not what I thought it was. And then the crew starts come portaling in thanks to Manifold and fight breaks out. But Stain is ready for him because he has the Fenris Quinn's Vanisher of all people. And there might have been somebody else. I can't remember. So you have Misty Knight, Storm, Manifold, and Luke Cage. You know, that's having this fight. And there's a lot of banter going on from Misty and Luke, and a little bit from Storm, as you know, matter. And that part was pretty cool. But then on the other side of it, you have T'Challa still bound, but fighting with Stain a little bit. And then somehow Stain gets away, but you know, T'Challa gets free, and we see somebody from a couple of issues ago that comes back that looks strikingly, and I don't know if it was a coloring thing or maybe that's actually what happened, because we see a person that looks like the Vision or a version of the Vision,
yeah,
that ends up helping them. But I'm believing that it is probably because T'Challa probably did something that made that happen, because this person had some cybernetics in them already, so maybe just went full blown. I don't know.
I'd have to reread, because I kind of got caught surprised. I got caught by surprise by that. Mm-hmm. It didn't ring a bell to me when I read it, and I'm looking at it again in the physical copy, and I'm still kind of confused by that.
Yeah, so I had to look it up. This is a character who came in issue 5,
okay,
as a terrorist.
Ah, okay.
And this is when that whole bombing thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And see, there the cops are coming. Now,
this is Brooklyn after all. Shout out to Brooklyn. But those rolling out, they're going somewhere.
Yeah, but yeah, last we saw this person, he was on a just like an operating table or a table or some kind of table being looked into, and had to go back and pretty much went back. And on the other side of this issue, we had, well, actually, there's a couple things that happened, because there was a meeting between Tetu, who was like the bad guy that's been introduced a few issues back also, and his mentor, Shagamire, Shagamire taught Tetu, but Tetu ended up going his own way, you know, and taking his teachings a different way than 4D thought. And when the first time they met, Shagamire was, you know, wasn't trying to join whatever Tetu was trying to do, and, you know, some words were had, whatever. So now Shagamire was trying to, he realized what he did then, and tried to talk to him now, and now Tetu and Zindi, I guess is the girl's name, who in the beginning of the arc, you know, far to Black Panther, they had some things happen with them, and that was the last we saw of that. But at the end of that little conversation, looks like, or at least at the end of the book, it looks like Tattoo's kind of got an idea of what he's going to do, and it's kind of far and away from what his teacher was thinking. And that was the end of that. But we also get to see in the middle of this book Shuri, who is still in whatever plane of existence. still with her mom. And then there's a story that she recounts that is more likely going to come up later. And if
the yeah, it'll play a role later. Yeah.
Yeah. And probably I'm going to assume in World of Wakanda, but I can't say that for certain. So Shuri tells this story that the ghost of her mother kind of asks her to recount and try to figure out what that story means. And at the end of telling that story, Shuri still doesn't know until she kind of thinks about it for a while, and then something manifests itself through that. So like I said, we have a couple of different plots going on, and obviously Shuri's coming back at some point, and this is probably getting ready for that to happen. But it is still an ongoing thing. But like I said, I enjoyed reading this book. The crew stuff for me was a big part of it, but the rest of the story still has some interest to me.
I thought it was an uneven read for myself, simply because I did lose a little bit of track of where we had been in the previous issue. And, I like that it did move Shuri's story along, because, you know, it felt like she's played a role in like every other issue.
Right.
You know, so I'm kind of glad to see that kind of moving towards some sort of resolution, and so that we can find out, is she supposed to be leading the other book, the spinoff book?
I
don't remember. I just
spinoff features the two
In the beginning, yeah, but they're supposed to be going elsewhere after their arc. So it's going to start with those two, but it's going to go in other places. So there's a chance she's going to be in that book, probably. Mm-hmm. At this point, I'm not sure.
I gotcha. Well, you know. In any event, I thought it was, it was a good read, but an uneven one. You know, in my opinion, Roddy, you know, covered most of the points of the issue. I just wanted to highlight the various covers that were available this week for Black Panther number 7. So I'm holding up the regular cover since Dirt's not here. You guys are gonna have to tune into the YouTube to watch me hold up my pull this week. So this is the regular cover for Black Panther number 7. Mm-hmm. This is the variant edition with Miles and Black Widow on it by Lionel Yu, which is pretty cool.
That's the Champions cover.
And finally, this one of this week's two hip-hop covers.
Mm-hmm. So now regular comics get hip-hop covers?
It's not the first time. I think it was the All-New Inhumans annual had a hip-hop cover, and I totally missed it. So that's the one I'm missing right now. Yeah, I think there's like a Deadpool issue too that had it too, like a non-number one. So, yeah, you gotta keep a lookout now for these hip hop covers not just being number ones. And that was a tribute to, what album is that? I had it written down here. It's King Miz's "Long Live the King."
Oh yeah, okay.
And this is Bill Sienkiewicz doing the tribute. All right, that's that. The cops apparently still have not gotten to where it is they're going. So if you hear the sirens in the back, they're still out there.
So I'm going to put this one up real quick, even though I have not read it yet. Speaking of hip-hop covers and long-living things, Invincible Iron Man number 1 had a hip-hop cover.
You mean Infamous?
Infamous, excuse me. Yeah, you're right.
Infamous, yes, I pulled that one too.
Yeah. Which is, as you see, is Long Live Von Doom, which is a takeoff of Big Daddy Kane's first album.
Yep, pretty cool. Kane.
I have no idea what's going on inside the book. I just want to bring that up.
Yeah, well, so we cover the two hip hop. We get okay, to cover that. Yeah. Oh, it's a good transition. We cover the two hip hop covers this week. Tell us about it, Tim, without spoiling everything.
There's not much. Well, they try to spoil a little bit the fallout from Civil War II. The books begin. I won't give any spoilers, but the book begins with a flashback to the Illuminati. Evil version with Doom and the Hood and Namor and White Queen, Emma Frost. Don't think I'm forgetting anyone. Oh, and the female Loki.
Right.
So they're waiting for someone to arrive. I forget what other member it was. So while they're sitting there waiting, because, you know, this is a Bendis book and people have to sit around and talk, the Hood starts asking Dr. Doom a bunch of questions. He's like, you know, I heard that your mother was killed by a demon or something like that, and you defeated her yourself and resurrected your mother. He's like, I just wanted to know, was that true or not? And, you know, Doom's just standing there, stoic, staring at him. And the Hood's like, you know what? I just wanted to know. And basically, Doom rattles off some threat that he could do to Hood if he doesn't stop his prattle, whatever the word is.
Prattle.
Prattle, thank you.
mindless prattle.
And then eventually he keeps asking questions, and eventually Doom teleports him somewhere. Basically, he just like vanishes in a beam of purple light. So everyone thought that he killed him, but he didn't. He just sent him to, I think he's at India. He's like, he'll find his way back and whatnot. And then like Emma Frost is like, no, that's too bad. I was hoping you killed him.
And wait, then does Hood actually have his hood?
Yeah, this is back in the old Illuminati.
Okay.
The hood, yeah.
I was about to say, that was...
He could just use his powers to get back if he wanted, but... so then it flashes forward to the present, and Doom's in his nice little business suit that he's taken to wearing in the Iron Man current books. He goes to visit that Dr. Amora, or scientist lady.
Oh, yeah, Tony's friend.
Tony's friend, because, yeah, supposedly, I guess, Doom helped get her a new job at some college or fancy place. So she's like wondering why he keeps coming around and why he's doing stuff for her. Something tells me that he reminds her of his mother, since there was a whole discussion about the mother at the beginning of the issue, but we don't find anything out, you know, any reasons why he's taking an interest in Amora.
I mean, the interest could be interest.
it started off with Tony having the interest. So yeah, so when she shows up, they have a discussion about Tony and his situation, which of course Marvel's like, yeah, we don't know about it, but Marvel's gonna say, oh, we kept some things hidden, but they pretty much at least confirm some stuff that might have happened to Stark.
Right.
Of course there still be a fake out, I'm sure. We find out Doom ends up leaving Amora. She's paid a visit by a former acquaintance, we'll say, of Dr. Doom's, who wants to know why, you know, has she seen Dr. Doom lately? We don't get an answer on that. Jump ahead to Dr. Doom in Tony's lab, where he decides to take on the name of Iron Man. And then there's a discussion that takes place in the lab. I won't give that away either, but that's sets up a nice dynamic as far as co-stars for the book. I'll keep it that way.
Does he mention anything about being superior?
No. He. The book ends with him putting on his suit of armor and flying off, and then some evil. I'm trying to think who was. Oh yeah, and then yeah. This isn't such a tease. There's some figures watching him from far away, you know, through like a crystal ball or whatever, and it's his mom.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was his mom. Yeah.
And then his mom ends up being Morgan Le Fay for some reason.
Didn't he have a thing with her, though?
Isn't someone's
an offspring of Morgan and Dr. Doom, I thought. Was it a woman in the Defenders? This was a storyline in a book a couple of years ago. Someone is the offspring of Doom and Morgan Le Fay that was in a comic.
Now I want to look that up.
Yeah. Do the same. Doom and Morgan Le Fay.
You guys are funny.
Yeah, you know.
This is thrilling podcast.
I know, right? Broadcasting right now. Podcast kills. Because it's not Mordred or whatever, because that's Morgan's child.
I'm mad because there's a book I've read recently. When I say recently, I mean within the last couple of years. Since we've been doing this show, I want to say, hopefully.
And that would fit Morgan. That would fit Fearless Defenders, but
that's
funny. Or maybe it was just Morgan Le Fay had a daughter.
Morgan Le Fay had a son. Actually, it looks like she's got more than a son, but
yeah, she probably got a couple.
Oh, yes. Okay, now I remember. Caroline Le Fay was in Fearless Defenders. You are absolutely right. In fact, Fearless Defenders won because she was like the main bad guy person.
Okay.
Caroline Le Fay. Oh my god. Dude, you guys just totally out nerded me for real. That's really good. Because I'm just like, what on earth are you guys talking about?
Yeah. And she is the daughter of Dr. Doom and Morgan. So, and I don't remember that part, but yeah.
Yeah, she was born to Dr. Doom and Morgan Le Fay many years in the past.
Nice.
Cool.
That's funny. All right. So
that's the myth for Iron Man.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get around to reading that. Thanks for not spoiling it.
Yeah, same here. Oh, I want to go back to, speaking of Civil War II, I want to go back to Michael Burke for 1 second, because if you did not already know the outcome of Hawkeye's trial, that comes out in that book also.
Yeah, that's been, if you were reading any of the Civil War tie-ins, you've learned what happened.
It's kind of well-worn, but just to get you happening, you were just reading that and whatever.
All right.
Tell me, so Doctor Strange is a big deal with this movie coming up, and I think the red carpet is tonight.
It is going on as we speak, actually, because Stanley just went through the carpet.
I saw you read it, Roddy, number 13.
I did, yes. So
I read it too.
It's all home week for Doctor Strange's Rogues Gallery, it seems, because there has been one per issue, and this is no exception. At the end of last issue, we see Doctor Strange disappear, and a muck turns out that he was being held prisoner by Nightmare. And in fact, in the beginning of this book, we see him in a dream sequence in the past, you know, when he was a surgeon.
And what's funny is that they actually play the dream sequence off almost like you're reading his origin.
Exactly.
And it's it's funny. It's obviously well timed with the movie, as Tim was.
And that's what I was thinking. Yeah, because I was like, huh, this is kind of coincidental in that. So
you know, if anyone decides to pick up the latest issue of Doctor Strange, I don't know if there's going to be another issue out by the time the movie drops in a few weeks. I have my ticket already, by the way, fellas. I may not be on that Thursday.
I'm not gonna be on that Thursday either.
Oh no,
I'm
we have to push the show.
There you go.
Yeah, we may have to push the show.
I need to look into that because I'm in a new town that's slightly larger, so I guess I need to look at purchasing tickets in advance.
Yeah, I haven't bought them yet, but I figured I was gonna try to make that one.
But so we have to see how many weeks is that from now? Is 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
I assume red carpets are like 2 weeks out.
Yeah,
so
it's only 2 weeks out.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
That's crazy. So just to get back to issue number 13. So as I was saying, this opening sequence that if you did read issue number 12, you understand is likely a dream sequence, really does feel like an origin. And it's interesting that in the sequence, Doctor Strange is played off as having a very, very healthy... Yeah, that's putting it mildly, because you know all of these females are basically asking to come back to bed like every other panel.
Right, basically trying to keep him from learning the secret.
You know, yeah, figuring out what's actually going on. Right. So you know, we find out that Baron Mordo, who feels like he's being robbed of his final victory, is still sort of hanging out in front of the Sanctum Sanctorum. And we finally get to a point in the dream sequence where Doctor Strange does finally figure things out, and there is a great, very well written, phenomenally drawn, wacky looking sequence. Right, the fight sequence between Doctor Strange and Nightmare is insane. And it even draws on some things that are in our current events, namely. Crazy Clowns. I'll leave it at that. Crazy
Which is the second book
clown.
That does that. Well, the first one was this week. But,
yes. So, you know, if you're living in any town in the U.S. right now where there's a crazy clown problem, you will recognize this and laugh. Yes. But there is a cool resolution to it at the end of this. But then, as Roddy alluded to earlier, at the end of this book, we're left with a mild cliffhanger because it is Old Foes Week or Old Foes Month.
In this arc is basically... Because I think Mordo even said it, or somebody said it last issue, it's pretty much open season for Doctor Strange now that everything
is... on Doctor Strange, yeah.
On Doctor Strange because of everything that has happened with the last days of the magic, presumably, you know, and the empirical. So that just kind of opened up a can of everybody gunning for him. And now we have a bunch of his enemies kind of making good on that. And they even mentioned that again, like this issue, because that was like the... No, it wasn't. Anyway, but I was like, Mordo, it was somewhere between the Mordo and Nightmare saying something about like, yeah, you know, it's been, the case has been open and people are coming after you, so.
Right. Isn't it cool seeing Chris Boccolo in his element, or Bocciolo in his element?
Yeah.
You know.
This is a well-drawn book, especially with that, the sequence that you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know what's funny is that I was reading it on, you know, I was reading the preview copy on my tablet, my smaller tablet, and it's pages like this, it's sequences like this that make me reconsider having a small tablet I can hold in my hand, a 7-inch tablet that's easy to hold onto on the subway, and upgrading to like a 9 or 10-inch tablet that I can just, I can still hold in one hand, but it's a little more awkward, but I can more easily enjoy these, you know, these splash pages for their art. You know, and that's one thing. It's one thing that I, you know, like now that I look at it on the printed page, you know, in my physical copy, it's just, it's amazing looking. The whole sequence is just phenomenally drawn. You know, Tim, I don't know if you've been reading this, but you should absolutely read this. And especially take a look at the art. You know, take a look at what the sequences that we're referring to. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm up to date on Doctor Strange. I just haven't gotten this week's issue yet.
Cool. All right.
Yeah, and it looks, I definitely love the fact that, you know, because of what's going on with Magic, he kind of has to go through new ways of dealing with his foes, and he comes up with a pretty interesting one in this one.
Right, and actually is, you know, kind of trailblazing his own way through Magic. You know, he's kind of creating.
Which, I think, right, which that was established last issue.
Right. All right. Did anyone else read Amazing Spidey number 20? Because that covers, that's the last of the books I read this week.
Not yet.
All right. I will not spoil too much. I will speak in very broad generalities because there's quite a few things that are revealed in this issue.
Clone conspiracy tie-in.
It is a very vital clone conspiracy tie-in because, you know, I'm not spoiling anything because on the freaking cover, Doc Ock, you know, we know he played a big role in the last clone conspiracy book. And we basically dive into how Otto Octavius is the way he is now and how, in fact, he has become part of the Jackal's group of villains. So that's it. I can leave it at that. It's very well done. It is a must read for anyone who's reading this crossover tie-in, crossover miniseries. And that's that for my books. I don't even have anything for Rapid Fire. So sad. And there's so many books out this week, too.
Yeah, indeed.
We get to what we can get to.
Yeah,
I have two books left.
It's a sad week.
Rapid Fire time.
I know. No, yeah. How sad is it? Like two of us only have five books each. That's bad.
Well, let's see. Roddy's only got Roddy's got one, two.
Got these two,
four
two.
Left.
So, what are you going to hit? Death of X.
But go for it.
Well, I was going to.
Death of X is
the Death of X variant cover by Dale Keown that I pulled this week. That's pretty cool.
Nice.
So, I'm trying to be supportive of this series since we're finally going back in time and figuring out what happened between the X-Men and the Inhumans. I like that it's a four-issue miniseries, so they don't have any time to waste. They get right to the good, the important beats of the story. Mm-hmm. It starts off with Storm visiting the Inhumans to see if they knew that the Terrigen Cloud Mist was harmful to mutants. Medusa says she doesn't. It basically came down to Storm wanting to see Medusa's reaction to tell if she was telling the truth or not. And she believes Medusa, so X-Men and Inhumans are going to try to work together to figure out a resolution. But before they can do that, Cyclops and Emma take it upon themselves to, with the help of the Stepford Cuckoos, to sort of transmit a vision of Cyclops to everyone on the Earth, basically an astral projection into everyone's minds. Cyclops basically revealing the secret that the Terrigen Mist is harmful. He hasn't really gone into so much that it's harmful to mutants, but it's harmful to humans. Basically saying the humans have been lying, they're only out for themselves, the mist is harmful, you know, we'll protect humanity, we'll stop the Inhumans, yada, yada, yada. There's two clouds, because the cloud is split up, which I remember being, I think, referenced in one of the old Inhuman, I think maybe Inhuman mentioned it, or all new Inhumans did it. But so there's one of the clouds is heading towards Madrid. So the Inhumans want to get there first to evacuate any mutants that might be in the path, but since Cyclops' astral projection, the whole country's freaking out and there's riots and whatnot, so they really have no time to evacuate mutants in the way. So I think it's Iso and Crystal decide to try to use their powers to push the cloud out the way, but of course they can't push the entire cloud out the way, and it's physically straining both of them. But then Storm shows up and uses her powers of wind to help push it along. So then they go about trying to stop the riots in the streets. There was a new Inhuman that debuted last issue, Dice K, that I guess has like the power to put people to sleep. So Crystal asks him to put every single person in Madrid to sleep. But since he's just new and learning how to use his powers. He doesn't know how to sort of hone it where it doesn't affect the X-Men. But, you know, Crystal's like, you know, just do it to everyone. We'll explain it to the X-Men later. Puts them all to sleep. Cyclops looks at that as a strike against the mutants. And I think it ends with Emma making a call to who else do you want to call when you need a powerful mutant on your side? You call Magneto.
Magneto, of course.
Yeah. So ends with that. So gotcha. Magneto will be joining the fray, as they say, next issue.
I have not been so keen on this series. Yeah. It's, you know, I haven't read this one yet, so I can't judge. But just based on that, I'm not so keen on it right now.
I went on a rant earlier today on stuff that we'll get to in comic book news, I'm sure. But I will just say I've grew up reading the X-Men books. Not reading that much of them now, unfortunately, because there's only like 3 or 4. Somehow, all new Wolverine seems to be the best of the group, or the one I'm enjoying the most. And I never read solo Wolverine comics, hardly ever, if at all, because it just never interested me.
No kidding.
But what they got coming up with Resurrection, hopefully, cross my fingers, but I'll get into that later.
Yes, we can discuss that in the news section. Stay tuned, True Believers.
Yeah, I was gonna ask. It was like I was wondering when they were gonna have Storm try to do something with the cloud. Another thing, I was like, I wonder how long it's gonna take for that cloud to become sentient, because that seems to be the next step in all of this.
I considered that. They do mention during Storm and Medusa's talk at the beginning that, you know, the mist affects mutants differently. Some get ill right away. Some it takes a little longer. Some it doesn't seem to bother them at all. Which is a nice way for them to pick and choose which characters.
Yeah,
which characters.
How does it affect the mutants with healing factors? Or has that come into play yet?
Hasn't come into play. How many mutants have healing factors left?
Probably good. Well, we know at least two. Three. Well, wait, three.
But Deadpool and...
Oh, yeah.
Deadpool, Old Man Logan, X-23.
Oh, yeah. That's right, Old Man Logan.
Or Wolverine, excuse me.
Yeah, those
is Sabretooth people. Still around?
Who's that?
Sabretooth.
Yeah, good question.
He's in Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah, so he's around. He's got a healing factor. That's four. Yeah. All right. What's next?
Well, so are we rapid fire at this point?
Yeah, you're all rapid fire.
I'm done. I got one book. I've got two books left. So, sure. Okay.
Well, let's do some insects here real quick. And another cat book. So, hang on a second. Spider-Gwen number 13.
Okay.
I had to try that. Sorry. So we have the Halloween issue where Gwen and the Mary Janes go trick-or-treating. Gwen's kind of, you know, not in a bad mood, but she's going to stay after the events of last issue and her father about to go to jail for, you know, helping her. So like, she's not really talking about that much. And we see the Mary Janes kind of talking about her in the beginning of this. Mary Jane has a theory that Gwen could be Spider-Gwen. You know, little does she know how right she is, except they're going trick-or-treating. They end up at this old carnival that's like way out in the woods that apparently it was owned by Mysterio.
They actually
happens, because they go up to this like fortune teller machine, which is in the shape of Mysterio, and it starts weaving a tale of the carnival, but it breaks down, and then after that they go further in because of one of their cats, or the person's cat, which is called Murderface, which is a great name for a cat, kind of gets scared and goes into the thing. So I think it was Betty. No, what is it? I can't remember. One of them went into after the cat. The rest of them fall into a trap that, you know, and a whole bunch of animatronic stuff kind of comes to life and starts to attack them. Mary Jane's like, look, we know you're Spider-Gwen, so, you know, go back and help us out. And she can't because she didn't bring her, well, one, she lost her powers, and she didn't bring her a wrist thing with her. So, and she's still kind of despondent, so it was like, oh, she's just like, well, I can't do it. So, but they end up whoever it was that was looking for the cat, whose name is escaping me right now. I think it was Betty Brant, actually. Now that I think about it. Finds Mysterio's control room and finds Mysterio himself, who ends up being, so this whole thing ends up being like a Scooby episode at the end of it, but we still don't know who Mysterio is, because Betty finds him, takes down Mysterio, and at first ends up being one person, and then ends up being somebody else, because she didn't buy it the first time, and she pulls off a couple different masks, and it ends up being nothing but a bunch of myths, but she ends up taking care of the robots that that are plaguing the rest of them with a big boom, and there's a Thriller reference, as one would expect with a Halloween issue, and that's pretty much how that plays off, and on their way back to the city after that. So it ends up being a pretty good read, because it was pretty fun, like I said, ended up being a Scooby issue in a sense, or at least referenced as such a part of it, because you kind of saw where it was going in the midst of it, but it was just a good solid Halloween issue if you like that kind of stuff. Let's see, Spider-Woman number 12, we have Jessica's Day Off. Her, the kid, and Roger and his kid are all on Staten Island at the beach. But apparently, if any trouble were to come about, that Porcupine would have to be the one to take care of it. And surely enough, it does, because at the beginning of this issue, we see a news report that Miles Morales was taking on Sandman, who apparently gets away in a police vehicle. So in the midst of the issue, ends up on the same beach that Jess and Porcupine are. And of course, Porcupine has to take care of it. And after a few missteps, which apparently, you know, Jess has been kind of training on how to deal with certain folks, including Sandman. He finally remembers how to deal with them, and then swiftly takes care of it after that. And the other cool part about this is, you see, which may not end up well in a couple of issues if the solicits seem to be in the thing. But we have a moment at near the end of this issue where Roger's kid, who knows he's the Porcupine, kind of sees, him fighting the Sandman, and Jessica's kind of was like telling her some things about even though it looks like he's losing, he's actually winning, that kind of stuff, so it wouldn't look bad on him. But like I said, he ends up winning, fighting in his way, and there's a little moment between he and his kid at the end of this, and that's pretty much where it ends. Like I said, and it doesn't seem like it's usually, if you have a tender moment like that, something bad seems like it's going to happen, but we don't know. But other than that, I enjoyed this issue. Let's see. Last insect book. Black Widow number 7 starts a new arc. No More Secrets. There's a couple of Star Wars records, Star Wars references on one page, which was pretty good. After the events of last issue, she has the employ of one Weeping Lion who was after her. We end up seeing visions of the past of her first kill, which apparently ends up in the midst of this book, ended up being a couple of members of Weeping Lion's family that we find out early on. But at this point in the present, he is helping her trying to find out what her former headmaster's secrets are with whatever new school that they're trying to train, basically a new Red Room that they're trying to head up. And that gets resolved in a slight way, even though I think there may be still more to come with that. We don't know. And at the end of the book, we see maybe some still goings on with Weeping Lion that will probably end up coming out at some point in the future. But like I said, that was also a pretty decent read. I got one more book. Captain America, Sam Wilson. So Flag Smasher shows up, takes some folks hostage. Steve Rogers comes in to help. They go up in this where Flag Smasher is having folks hostage. Flag Smasher, does a villainy monologue for like a couple of different minutes, which, by the way, Nick Spencer kind of writes some very loquacious villains, but I kind of dig it somehow.
Just like an Ant-Man.
Exactly. So after doing that, a fight breaks out as per usual, which ends up with some people getting killed and Sam trying to prevent another person get killed. That doesn't happen. All the while all the stuff that happened, there's also some background stuff with some data bombs that Rick Jones was trying to decipher, dealing with the people that are, held hostage. And he kind of gets the lead on that, but not before, like the last person who was trying to be prevented to get killed by Flag Smasher gets killed by a mistimed throw. Well, what we thought to be a mistimed throw by Sam with his shield, and come to find out that there was a person. Yeah, spoiler alert: there was a person that is close to the scene that is behind that particular incident. And as a matter of fact, not only that, but the whole hostage affair in the first place, as we see from the ending of this book. You know. And if you've been reading the Captain America books, you know who and what we're talking about. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. But
anyway. All right. So,
all my books.
Clicks of the week.
Wait, I've got two, sir.
Oh, you still got two. You got two with DC. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
So, once we finally move off Google Hangouts and we lose the sound effects, I see Roddy's going to be our new sound guy.
Yeah, maybe not. We'll work something out.
We will.
So Batman number 9 begins the I Am Suicide story arc, where Batman goes into Arkham Asylum to assemble his Suicide Squad to go take on Bane in Santa Prisca. Issue starts off with sort of a story from Bane of his childhood growing up in the sort of rough and tough prison of Santa Prisca. Then it moves to Batman taking Amanda Waller up on her offer of forming a team to go help. Basically, the Psycho Pirate is with Bane, and Batman needs Psycho Pirate to cure Gotham Girl from her sort of fear-induced state that Psycho Pirate. So you see, you have, which I didn't notice at the time, but like Bronze Tiger is recruited, who was an original member of the Suicide Squad. Some Julie and some other character I've never heard of before, I think, were also members of Suicide Squad. As he's walking through Arkham Asylum, you see these other sort of obscure Batman rogue villains, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, I think their names were. You see Calendar Man, who was in the Rebirth issue. Kite, I think not Kite Man, but some other like random person is shown. And then you see a blonde-headed girl in a room. She blows on the glass to fog it up, and then she creates a symbol in the fog she created, and the symbol is the Legion symbol. So more than likely, it's the same girl from the DC Rebirth, DC Universe Rebirth issue. Her nameplate on her cell is Doe, so probably Jane Doe, since they don't know what her name is. But you get your Legion tease yet again. More than likely, it'll be Tom King writing a Legion book in the future, because they've said that Legion is coming. That was one of the books that they held back on. One of the cast of characters they said they were going to hold back on for the time being. And King has stated he's a big Legion fan, so I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up writing that. And then the final member, the original ventriloquist is chosen. And then finally, Catwoman. So that's Batman number 9. And Nightwing number 7 starts a new story arc where Nightwing goes after Rapture, because he believes Raptor double-crossed him. They have a big, loud, screaming physical fight with one another. And Raptor teases some more about his history with the Graysons, specifically his mother. And Dick ends up finding a photo of his mother and who we can assume is Raptor at the circus. And that's it.
I was going to mention that Tweedledee and Tweedledum was on Gotham last week.
Oh, the show.
Yeah.
I hate to say this. My only reference point is the animated series for so many of these characters.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like they were probably on the cartoon maybe at one point in time.
I believe they were, yeah.
So.
Good stuff.
All righty. Pick clicks of the week now. Now is the time?
No.
Yeah.
Now. All right. Let's see. I think mine is fairly simple. I only have a few to pick from. I'm tempted to choose Astonishing Ant-Man number 13, but I think I had the most fun reading. Oh, man, this is tough. I'm going to go with Amazing Spider-Man number 20.
Seems like a safe pick.
It was good.
I'm going to go with, for my small selection, I'm going to go with Batman number 9, because Mikael Janin is on art, and the book looks great.
Nice.
Plus, I like this. I'm excited for this I Am Suicide story. King said he's going to take Bane back to being this big threat. He kind of felt like he's become sort of a joke.
Yeah, because he became a meme for such a long time. So, how about you, Roddy?
Well, before I do mine, I think it's good that we should probably bring up Dirt's, which is Zombie Tramp number whatever it is this week.
Does it come out every week that he's not on the show?
That would be some funny mess if that was the case. No, because he's been on the show a couple times when it's been out, so that's not it. Well, for my small meager selection, this is kind of tough because there was a couple of great ones. So shout out to all the books that are sadly ending this week. Man, I hate this.
Yeah. I don't blame you. There are a lot of books to choose from. I can imagine some of the books I would have liked if I'd gotten to read them, you know, in time to pick a click of the week this week.
So going to go with, despite the fact of some of the revisions, all right, despite some of the revisions that that they put in, I'm going to go with Mockingbird number 8.
Nice. Looks,
I do love the Black Panther and Dark Strange was really great, but I think this could very well edge the, this was kind of on par with that, and not just because of the fact that it's ending, even though we tend to do that sometimes, but with good reason.
Right. Well, listen, Astonishing Ant-Man 13 came really close to me, you know, pretty close for me. So it was that good a book. So alrighty. So let's pull in our first ad read of the night. So let me tell you about Skullcandy. Skullcandy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skullcandy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones, and the soon-to-be Switch headphones. And now, for the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, Skullcandy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skullcandy by going to cspn.us. That's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link. Click on the Skullcandy banner, and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skullcandy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today. Alrighty.
First up in the cinematic news of the week, you can watch Vixen Season 2 on the CW Seed app.
So this came out there. That came out last week, while we were recording. But it looks like they only have the first episode though, and it's like 6 months long. It's pretty much the stuff that you saw if you've seen the trailer for the new season. It's what it is.
Yeah, if it's like last season, it's every week a new episode.
Right. That seems to be the case.
It's boo. Yeah. Jump all at once. Don't make me wait.
Just make it a full-fledged series and don't do this 5-minute craziness.
Mark Guggenheim reveals Captain Cold's Legends Return. Toss Arrows won the episode.
Yay.
Sony now. Am I supposed to applaud for that?
Nah. I mean, you know.
All right.
Standard news. Sony Nabs Professor Marston. Biopic about Wonder Woman creator stars Luke Evans, Rebecca Hall, and Bella Heathcote.
Yeah. This has to be interesting because, outside of creating Wonder Woman, he had quite interesting life. So that's ought to make for a pretty decent biopic.
There's a bunch of Doctor Strange TV spots.
Well, just one TV spot, but the first one is about... So there was a brand synergy for corporate synergies at work here because there was a clip from General Hospital that just pretty much name checks the Doctor Strange movie. That was pretty funny. So if you ever get the chance to check out the show notes, which is right there underneath me, you know, go check that out. And then the other one was actual TV spot.
We got new trailers for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 with new poster. And the regular and red band / international trailers for Logan.
I'm not sure how to react to that. I don't know if I have an appropriate sound effect for this. Because
trailer
I thought,
fine.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it looked cool. I'm kind of cringing at the thought of how they're going to mix and match some of these storylines.
Let me help you with that.
Well, definitely there is a Western theme. They also obviously use a song that evokes that kind of imagery. That's Johnny Cash's cover of Nine Inch Nails' Hurt. So, that definitely evokes some of that imagery. But at the end of the day, like I said, they're not pulling just from Old Man Logan, but they're pulling from some of the other Wolverine-centric storylines. So it's kind of interesting to see what they're going to pull in. We know from casting news that Mr. Sinister is probably going to be in this, Essex, and that they're Reavers, but they may not be Hellfire Club Reavers. We're not sure. We'll see how that goes.
Well, yeah, they could do that part, because I was thinking when I saw that trailer, like, what else could they pull from Old Man Logan, because considering there's like one or two parts that they don't have access to, or at least small parts. Like, I granted,
right,
I
like the Hulks. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or like Hawkeye goes. But, yeah, who knows? It's
weird. All right.
So, before Hulk, Mark Ruffalo auditioned to be Dr. Doom.
Wow. Can you imagine how different that would be?
Well, yes and no, but this was also, this basically has to do with the 94 terrible Fantastic Four movie. So this was Ruffalo before the Ruffalo we all know and love, and that was not a great movie all around, so I don't know even if he was, if he could even save that movie. But this is basically from the Roger Corman
version.
Yes, and this is from the documentary on that movie where we found this out.
Gotcha.
There's rumor that Ruby Rose and three more actresses are also testing for the role of Domino in Deadpool 2.
Okay.
Arrow's boss clears up the Suicide Squad character embargo. So for those who don't know, the
spoilers for this week, I guess.
Floyd Lawton returned to Arrow this week. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm going to read this. DC still gets veto power in instances. It's always a case-by-case thing, so I never like talking about, like, oh, this is what we can do going into the future. I don't know what the future holds because I haven't approached that case-by-case situation. Okay. Yeah, too bad they can't bring back Amanda Waller since she
I was exactly thinking that. And I was thinking, they could actually do it given that, unless I missed something. Well, I don't know. I haven't seen this week's Arrow yet. Flashpoint still hasn't hit that show yet.
Well, it has, kind of.
It has?
Oh, yeah, okay. They even showed the clip in the, last week on Arrow, technically it was last week on Flash.
Wait.
Because
we were last week on Arrow, and I don't remember no any Flashpoint stuff going on in Arrow.
No, I was saying on this week's Arrow.
This week. Oh, okay. So it catches up this week. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they referenced that they showed when Felicity and Barry were talking and stuff that was changed.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay.
So Arrow had to hand over its toys, killing off Deadshot and Amanda Waller, banishing associate characters like Manu Bennett's Deathstroke or Nick Turbay's Captain Boomerang to off-screen exile. I forgot Captain Boomerang appeared on Arrow and not The Flash.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because Flash
Captain Boomerang. I know. Has Captain Boomerang appeared in a Flash comic recently? I feel like he hasn't.
Wait, wasn't he the one with Captain Cold when they were in the Justice League, or was that somebody else? And that was
Captain Cold.
I know, but wasn't there someone else?
He was the only villain character added to the group. And then that even kind of went away by the time the Dark Side War started.
Hmm.
Anyway. Yeah. Black Panther casts Ready Player One's Letitia Wright as Sarita.
Is it Letitia or Letitia? I didn't read that.
I'm not sure. I'm sure I probably said it wrong.
So it's that. I think that's the typo. And it is Letitia, looks like, in the article.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Headline has something as a letter missing.
Okay, I see it now. So that the woman in Captain America Civil War? No.
Well, no.
That's
not the
bodyguard
lady. No. That was Florence Kasumba, which she's going to be in Black Panther. And apparently they gave her, which we talked about this last week, but she has a name.
This is an original character for the movie.
Apparently, yes.
Okay. Let's see. Let's get into the comic news. Scroll. So yeah, the January 2017 solicits came out. Go to your favorite comic book site to get the rundown of what new to expect in 3 months. I did do
notes.
Elder Show Notes. I did do an article on BamSmackPal.com of my 5 top takeaways from the DC solicits, and plan on doing the same thing for the Marvel ones.
Nice.
Let's see, comic news. Linda Carter and Gal Gadot will be there when Wonder Woman is named an honorary UN ambassador. Congrats.
Yay.
Something that I thought was a fake story or just like some like fan-made thing turns out to be true. DC and Boom Studios announced Justice League, many more from Power Rangers. But I like the creative team, Tom Taylor and Stephen Byrne.
Yeah, I honestly thought this was a joke.
Yeah, I do all these like articles on CBR for, you know, like I did an article a couple weeks ago about Blade and some other character mashup movie, you know, they mashed up it was Blade and Ghost Rider mashup film. You know, I did an article that, so I saw Justice League and
Power Rangers
and I was just like, oh, some fan thing. But nope, it's real.
I mean, given the number of crossovers there has been, you know, between
DC and Boom, DC's on a good working relationship with Boom and IDW, so.
Mm-hmm. So this one wasn't that hard to think about.
Well, as friend of the show William Bruce West says, Power Rangers aren't really like superheroes. He doesn't see them as superheroes, so that it's like a team up that doesn't make sense.
Well, a lot of them that doesn't make sense either. But
come on, they teamed up Punisher and Archie. They can team up virtually anyone.
Basically.
Mignola returns to Hellboy's world for the Visitor. How and why he stayed.
Yeah, maybe this is why Dirk wasn't around, because he was too busy eating. You
know. Celebrating.
Yes.
There's another Deadpool Almage character created.
No. Yeah. Oh,
no. Whirlpool.
Oh. Enough already. Enough already.
Bleh. That's what I say. IDW announces.
Roddy's got variations on our sound effects now. Testing IDW, them out.
IDW announces Biff to the Future from Bob Gale, Derek Fridolfs, and Alan Robinson.
I like the spin on the title.
We already got to Mockingbird canceled. Mm-hmm. And then we get to all the Marvel teases for Resurrection. We got new series spinning out of Resurrection, Iceman number one, Jean Grey number one,
Weapon X
number one, and Generation X.
Degeneration X. Exactly. I'm kind of jazzed. It's funny. I inherited a portion of someone's collection, and it completed my an actual run of Generation X, and I had dropped the book after it just got too, it was just too much of a burden to keep reading it. But you know, I kind of missed the team dynamic in that, especially in the early, you know, let's say like the early, like the first like 15 to 20 issues. You know, Chris Bachalo was in there doing art. It was a lot of great stuff. You know, I'm kind of looking forward to see what new or young mutants they put into this book.
I like that. In the image, it included every like sort of young mutant team that X-Men have seen in their history. You had the new mutants on there, even though X-Force wasn't represented.
I guess they
kind of had. Was X-Force on there?
I gotta take a look at the image.
Which version?
No, I feel like X-Force kind of like they graduated, so they didn't count that. But it was like new mutants, Generation Hope, Generation X, New X-Men. And one more I'm forgetting, I feel like.
Oh, I was about to say, you just said it, though. I was going to ask if they did the new X-Men one.
Which I want to go back and read all those new X-Men stuff.
They were all right. I don't too much care about that team, but it was actually a relatively fun book.
Yeah. It looked like it was, and I liked, like, Humberto Rambis did some of the art, and was it Chris Yost wrote it? He's pretty good.
Yeah. I don't remember.
So, they, of all the teasers, the Generation X one has me the most excited. Cross my fingers.
Yeah,
if it's young people, then more than likely I could see Dennis Hopeless riding it.
Hmm. The only thing I hate about this, well, not hate, this is a little strong word, but I don't know. I feel like, well, Iceman and Jean Grey are getting their first books. Neither one of them have had a solo book before, and I feel like, sadly, it might last longer than Storm's book.
They'll make it to double digits, like 12. 10 and 13, since that's when everything seems to be canceled nowadays.
Yeah.
Hey, why not? They do the seasonal model anyway, so they don't expect these titles to last that long. They have the creative team pitch like a 12-issue story and cut it if the sales are horrible. Mm. Seems to be the way they go. After a significant delay, Civil War 2 number 7 moves back up 1 week. So it's now scheduled to be released November 23rd instead of November 30th, when it was originally supposed to come out yesterday, Wednesday, October 19th.
Yeah, that's a big change, man. Wow. Woo.
There was rabble over Riri Williams' variant covers for Invincible Iron Man number 1.
Totally unjustified rabble, but nevertheless.
Yeah, what I was going to say is, have these people not seen J. Scott Campbell draw any female?
Actually, I would answer that, probably not. But,
you know?
Yeah,
but
at the same
time, that still doesn't.
Exactly. At the same time, I understand it because the character is not quite, 15?
Like, so, 15, yeah. She was pushing a 14-year-old.
Yeah, that's pushing it a bit. You know what I mean? But it's at the same time, you kind of see J. Scott Campbell's art, kind of pushing in that direction anyway. So,
I don't think she looked that bad myself, but that's just my opinion.
You could see it. Right, you could just see it. You can understand the criticism, but you just don't think it's as bad as they're making it up.
The problem is they've got all these extra eyes on the product now, so when people just see, they just look at that and that's all they see. They think that's what the art's going to look like on the inside. And
I don't know if that's true.
I think some of that has to do with it. They just see that cover and they're like, why they got her looking like that? That's how they think she's going to look.
Yeah,
the article
given the other issues. I mean, given other images that we've seen over there, like, I'm not sure if that's the case, but who knows?
But yeah, so I get the frustration. I didn't get frustrated over it, but I can see the frustration. Hi, this is Tim Dog. If you've gotten this far into the show, I want to thank you for listening. Unfortunately, it appears we experienced an issue with Google Hangouts during the recording and didn't realize it until the video finished processing. So you missed out on about 10 to 15 minutes of news footage. I want to apologize for the inconvenience, and we're going to work on researching other recording possibilities so this doesn't happen in the future. So with that in mind, I want to let you know what news items you missed out on. Black number 1 sells out, goes to second printing. Valiant's Harbinger Renegades number 1 expands with Rip, Allen, and a new villain. Melanie Scrofano to write her own Winona Earp comic out in January. Women Rule in Lady Castle from Delilah S. Dawson and Ashley A. Woods. Marvel cancels Invincible Iron Man variant, releases new Riri illustrations. And that's the end of the show. Again, I want to apologize for the inconvenience and the recording error, but please stick with us, and thank you for watching and listening. This is Tim Dog, signing off.